My name is Antonio Thackeray. I am a storyteller and an author. And my website is myname.com, which is Antonio Thackeray, S-A-C-R-E.com. And also I'm on Instagram and Twitter with the same name, Antonio Thackeray. And I live in Los Angeles. Yeah, I have three picture books, two published by Abrams Books for Young Readers in New York.
Oh, okay.
One is called A Mango in the Hand, A Story Told Through Proverbs. The second is called La Noche Buena, A Christmas Story, which is how Cubans celebrate Christmas Eve. And my first book, which has been out the longest, published by Albert Whitman and Company, is called The Barking Mouse. And it's a story about the power and joy of being bilingual. And the book I have for older readers, for parents and junior high kids, is called My Name is Cool, 18 Stories from a Cuban Irish American Storyteller. And that's my first foray into sort of, it's a longer collection of short stories. I'm not a picture book.
Nice.
And I have other stuff coming out next year.
You identify yourself online as the most successful storyteller you never heard of. Well, people are going to hear about you now.
Thank you for having me on. Yes, it's funny. Whenever I'm on a plane, I travel a lot to tell stories. You know, storytelling is the oldest thing that we do. We do it all the time. But when I say I'm a storyteller, they have no idea what I'm talking about. And really, it's just connecting with the oral tradition and trying to preserve my own family stories and encouraging other people to do the same.
Is that what your business card says? Storyteller?
It does. Yeah. And, you know, everyone has that storyteller in their family, you know.
Yes.
And my dad is funny. He says, he's from Cuba, and he says, it's amazing you make a living as a storyteller because you're only about the 10th best storyteller in our family. It's funny because it's true in some ways that there are amazing storytellers in all of our families.
That's
and
so true.
One of the, you could probably identify, you know, that one uncle or aunt, or maybe it's yourself, who's the storyteller in your family and the people that we want to hear. And now that I'm realizing that some of the old people are some of them are no longer around, and I'm trying to hold on to their memories and thoughts and some of their stories just to pass on to my own kids and then to my audiences as well.
I think being bilingual and so positive and uplifting is certainly something timely that we need right now. Your YouTube presentation is so inspiring.
Thank you very much. Yes, as a kid, I grew up in Delaware, not too far from Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as a kid, it was my house. It was normal to be bilingual. My dad spoke Spanish. My mom spoke English. They both learned each other's languages, and I grew up with both. And it wasn't until school that some kids would make fun of me for that, which I did what a lot of children of immigrants do. I stopped speaking the language. Mm-hmm. And then my grandmother was the one, and going back to, you know, stories from the old people, she said, this is a valuable, amazing gift. And there are some things that don't translate in either languages, you know, so there are things that I could only understand from my grandmother speaking Spanish with her.
Mm-hmm.
So long before I knew that it was an actual business thing that would be great to have, it was just a way to connect with my grandmother. And now I see children doing the same. I want them to realize this great power that they have. It's almost like a superpower to be able to speak with people from other places and understand in their language where they're coming from. And there's some real power there.
I've often thought that if we were more familiar with our ancestors' stories, we wouldn't have such a great need for Ancestry.com. And I think that's another reason why, I mean, not only this whole flap about immigration, but you've really plugged into something on many levels.
It's true. And in some ways, like the Ancestry.com, I know it's a big thing. People love it. But in some ways, the thing that really connects us back to the family, and more than just the genes, is the stories. What is the story that we tell in our family? Like, we are the kind of family that does this, or we love this particular thing. We love humor is important to us, or singing is important to us, or we're the, you know, so those kinds of stories connect. And you know, I remember my dad just telling me, he said, you know, we came here from Cuba with nothing, and we're the kind of family that works really hard, and we're the kind of family, you know, and so I grew up with those sort of things from my family. Now, I'm aware that people can't connect with their family. My mom's side of the family, their parents died when they were younger, so they were raised in foster homes, so they don't have that kind of connection. So they're creating the connection now for future generations. So, you know, that's something that I'm aware of too. Like, okay, if you can't go back, if you can't trace your stories back two or three or four generations, you can be the one to hold the stories for the next generations.
Yeah, maybe because of your mom, that's why you are a storyteller. partly.
I think that's totally true. Yeah. Yes, yeah. For sure.
You are a storyteller in residence at the UCLA Lab School. What is that about?
You know, it's funny. As a storyteller, I take whatever, you know, things come my way. And about 10 years ago, this really lovely kind of fancy school on the campus of UCLA in Westwood here in Los Angeles, near where I live. 150 years ago, they educated the professor's children. And now they, for the last 20 years, have had a storyteller. This school realizes the importance of the oral tradition in helping kids learn to read and write. And so I'm very fortunate to have been introduced to them and to sort of take over the tradition of that. And basically the teachers just realize that when a storyteller like me comes in and tells stories to the kids, whether it's my personal stories from my own family or these old traditional stories that I've learned from Cuba or Mexico or Puerto Rico or even the older fairy tales, the Grimm stories and the Andersen stories, it helps the kids read at any level. I work with the preschool kids all the way up through the sixth graders. And, you know, if the sixth graders are too cool for school and they sit there and looking at you, and then you start with Once Upon a Time, and then their eyes get big and they're listening. And, you know, there's always that one teacher that doesn't think a kid is going to sit and listen because they're so tied in with their devices and these games. But the power of the story, you know, even these simple stories about my grandmother, these complicated fairy tales from 500 years ago, really make these kids listen. And the science backs up that their brains are doing something that doesn't happen any other way. There's functional MRIs that show that you can only activate parts of your brain through the power of actually telling stories in the oral tradition. And this is the kind of thing that you know, you want all areas of the brain to light up when kids are learning. The part from arts and the part from language and the part from stories and, you know, movement. And so it's nice to tap into that tradition. I didn't know I was doing that. That's what storytelling is doing, but I've been, you know, looking at some of that as well and realizing that there's great value there.
It's amazing how even hyperactive kids who are being bad and hanging upside down, and if you go to tell them a story, they quiet down pretty quickly.
It's so funny. You say that. It is. And one of my favorite compliments that I get from teachers or principals around the country is, we never thought that kid would sit and listen, and she was listening or he was listening. And also when the kids come up to me, and the opposite happens, sometimes there's kids that are bouncing up and down in the chairs and I'm thinking, oh, well, that's one kid that's just not going to get it. You know, and he's the one that comes up to me afterwards and knows every single bit of the story from the last, you know, 40 minutes. So, yeah, it is tapping into something. You know, I think even as parents or, you know, adults, we get a little scared. We think the kid might not want to listen. Another thing I run into is people think my story is not very interesting. Why would a kid want to hear it? And the reality is, you know, one of the things I love telling my own children, I have two children, telling them about cassette players and 8-track players and AM radio, you know, like all these things.
Hey,
that
watch it.
When we were, I know, you know, it's funny. I love AM radio. I'm always listening to it in my car in Los Angeles.
Love it.
And, you know, and some kids, you know, have iTunes. They don't understand the concept of the radio. They're listening on their device, right? Their iPads or, you know, and so to explain to them how you would discover things on the station that you didn't know were there, not just the stuff your friends are telling you to listen to. So, you know, my kid loves to exaggerate how old I am, but he loves to hear the stories of the old days, right? Even, you know, days before we went to the beach yesterday, days before sunscreen existed. What did you do, Dad? You know, and I said, we did baby oil with the mirror.
Yes, what we did. Yes. The family dinner table is the perfect spot, isn't it? And time for storytelling. How can we incorporate storytelling into mealtime?
I understand what it is being a parent. It's very difficult just to get kids at the table and get food there. How can we get rid of the devices for 20 minutes, right?
Yes.
Can you just put them down, both with the kids and the adults? And so we have a strict no device. Both my kids love Lego. So there's Lego all over the table. So if we clear the table, we put down whatever food, whether it's mac and cheese from a box or something nice that one of us makes, whatever we can do that day. And the thing that we're doing that just starts really simply is just, what is one thing we're grateful for? You know, I've been reading the research on gratitude, and it's just nice to hear my kids say, I'm grateful that my teacher let me, you know, do this fun thing today, or this one girl gave me this toy to play with. So these are micro stories, these little tiny stories that we share. But then the gift that my wife and I give is real undivided listening attention. So the power of telling stories is important, but equally powerful is the power of listening to these stories. Yeah. The empathy that creates, getting to really know them in a different way, in a quiet way. This has become a ritual for us. Even if it's, you know, we have 10 minutes till we have to get out of whatever class, we make sure that everyone has a little chance to have a little bit of gratitude and that we all kind of listen back at that. There is a moment of time. It's like you need to have that space created where you can actually listen. When another writer I read, she says, listening with your heart, right? Just trying to figure out exactly what you're hearing. This goes to the bigger question, too, of just the stories in our society. You know, what stories are we not really hearing, and why are we acting in certain ways by not knowing what's going on? Once you know the story that's happening, it's really hard to feel a certain way about somebody when you realize what is going on behind it. So, you know, in small ways we're doing that, but then in longer ways throughout the day, I try to get into the longer stories. Like, what were you feeling at that moment? What else was happening? And, you know, I guess with my kids more, since they hear me tell stories so much, is the function of listening as well. That deep listening is really, really powerful for everybody, but for specifically for children as well.
You are offering online classes for teachers. Tell us more about that.
So many teachers, for sure, understand the importance of all the things that they have to do. I'm so aware of all the things that they have to do with the testing and the things they do. The thing they forget is that they're just natural storytellers. And, you know, when I think back on all my teachers, I think back, you know, the times that they told me stories about their own lives is when I really connected with the lessons. I remember my history teacher in high school would just talk about his days when he was in the Army, and he did it to talk about history. So when teachers share their own stories with their students become more engaged. It also, like I said, helps them read better. This is at all levels, from pre-K through high school. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just helping teachers. I do district-wide workshops with teachers nationwide, but now with my own two children, I'm traveling much less. And so I'm going to offer an online live streaming where I'm telling teachers five simple ways that you can introduce storytelling throughout the curriculum that you're already doing. Now, I'm not telling them to do something more because their plates are already so full. I'm just showing them how they can just introduce storytelling throughout their day in all the different subject matters to get the kids more engaged. And then I'll give them a few tips that I use to make the stories more interesting. Most teachers I know are phenomenal presenters and performers, and they're really just up there just, you know, hours and hours in front of kids. They already know what they're doing, but I'm just reminding them of some of the techniques that help them get the stories across once they know the stories they're going to tell.
If someone wants to get in touch or find out more about storytelling, what can they do?
There are story guilds and there are story concerts and open mics in every community. I've traveled in 45 of the 50 states and in 13 other countries. So storytelling is definitely something that is happening. There are very famous places for storytelling like the Moth. There are tiny, tiny places for storytelling like almost, you know, any cafe has they'll have a comedy night, but they'll have a storytelling night. There's the National Storytelling Network, which will list a whole bunch of resources. They can just Google National Storytelling Network. Every state has a guild, and there are places where you can go and listen to stories. The National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee is the big festival, and that spawned a bunch of other festivals nationwide. There's a wonderful storytelling festival that goes on all summer in Central Park at the Hans Christian Andersen statue. And storytellers go and just, I've done that many times. I love it. They just tell stories at the statue there. That was a phenomenal thing. My favorite resource for sure is your local library. If you go down to your local library, the librarian will, for sure, I can almost guarantee, we'll have at least one storyteller coming throughout the year. I do dozens of libraries in the Los Angeles area, sometimes for free, sometimes for pay, sometimes for whatever they have, because it's such an important part of my mission. And storytellers, the librarians are also the places to go to connect with your own cultural stories that may exist in print. You know, my local librarian has been a godsend to help me find all of these phenomenal folktales that my family never knew. My grandmother, you know, had second grade education. You know, she didn't have, aside from the Bible in the house, there's no books. Mm-hmm. All of her stories were in her head. And so for me to back up sort of the folktale research, my local librarian helped me. So those are the places that I go to. The easiest place is just the library. Go down to the library and say, hey, where is the storytelling? When are the storytellers coming through? What are the books I can grab to support my cultures and my own stories?
And to find out more about you,
I have a website. You asked about a business card. I don't have them anymore. It's just my website. Which
I
is
I know.
AntonioSacri.com. And I'm also active on Instagram and Twitter with the same name, Antonio Sacri.